To the sweet spot for the AT&T Byron Nelson. I'm your host, Mike Alexander, a.k.a. Rotowan Kenobi. With me, as always, Alex Ramazowski. What's going on, Alex?
Let's go. AT&T Byron Nelson, baby.
Yep, it's an interesting one. Being played on a new golf course, new to the PGA, built just a few years ago. Nobody has a handle on this course at all. It's a bit of the Wild West right here.
Yeah, as much as a negative mindset as I've been in trying to figure this out, I think there are some pretty positive things about weeks like this. So I guess I'll try to like put a positive spin on my thinking right now and say that these are those weird weeks that nobody knows anything, and half the people playing DraftKings, playing FanDuel, playing betting, they don't know anything about this field either. So I think that in a strange way presents an opportunity. So
yeah, the playing field's really leveled. You know, I was feeling the same frustrations digging in, researching yesterday. But today I'm kind of coming around. I'm actually kind of enjoying the challenge of, you know, this brand new thing that there's no course history on the PGA. Very few of these guys have played it. Even information on the course is like spotty and somewhat unreliable because you're getting conflicting reports. So yeah, I'm actually kind of embracing it, and I think it could be a bit of fun, but we'll jump into that in a minute. To recap the Players Championship, you got Webb Simpson running away with the thing, even with the double to finish his tournament there. He didn't want to seem like he was running it up. You know, didn't want to be at minus 20.
You know, watching that final round, actually, I was listening. I watched probably half of the final round after the leaders started, or whenever NBC starts their coverage, like 10 minutes before the leaders tee off, which is interesting as it is, because before then it was extremely hard to even watch anything else. But anyway, it seemed like nothing could possibly go wrong for Webb Simpson, which, first of all, hell yeah, Webb Simpson. I've been waiting for this day. And it was awesome to see. I wish I wasn't in the mindset that I think most DFS players were about Webb Simpson coming off of the miscut and Quail Hollow. He's a member. He's going to do great. This course fits him. Miscut. Like, I think that set a lot of people sour on Webb Simpson. But you know me. I'm always a little bit into Webb Simpson. Yep. So I did the usual. Throw him in here and there, even though I will admit I tried not to talk about him, not to write about him last week. And I'm not even sure if I did.
We didn't really touch on him that much. You know, we mentioned him in there, but I kind of did the same thing. I only built three GPP lineups and played pretty light, but he made it into one of them. It just got spoiled by it was either Ricky or Rory was in that one. And I think I had another miscut as well. It was another brutal week of just, you know, it's anybody's game. Anybody can miss the cut. And, you know, we're probably looking at a similar setup again this week. Three straight weeks of some tough golf.
Yeah, I mean, on the players' note, there were definitely some big names who upset big time. Friday was definitely very interesting in terms of sweating the cut for a few different people. And going off this week, I think it could definitely be true again. And like after every major, after every big tournament, there's always that next week, the hangover week that you have no clue what's going to happen, but there's always one or two big names there. And I think that's what we have this week. Mm-hmm. And I guess we'll talk about how to approach that. But as far as the players, like Thursday, Friday was just like, I mean, Webb was up there literally the entire time. So I'm looking at anywhere I have Webb Simpson, which just so happened to be one of my best lineups out there that didn't have a miscut, didn't have Ricky Fowler, didn't have mm-hmm. Phil Mickelson, who I was weirdly heavy on, didn't have Brant Snedeker, who I always like, Luke List, who everyone seems to like, Kevin Streelman, who I'm never playing again, like Gary Woodland, who I'm never playing again, Hideki, who people always feel the need to play, even though yeah. he pretty much sucks 75% of the time these days. Uh-huh. So I know we talked about it. I know we all knew that it's the players and that anything can happen and that you're going to see some big miscuts like that. But when it actually happens, it's always tough to swallow. And I think I lucked out pretty much until that final day, which was kind of tore me apart, really ruined my weekend Sunday, the last 30 minutes of that tournament. But
yeah,
overall, hey, you know, Tiger Woods put it in the water. That yep. sucked, but he wasn't going to win anyway. So as far as anyone who just cares about the golf, what's happening, and Tiger, it didn't really matter. And then Webb Simpson went on to double bogey the last hole, both of which were in my lineup there, Tiger and Webb. And that didn't matter either because he was going to win the tournament one way or another. And that's the funny twist DFS puts into some things because, man, those two things combined really screwed me.
Mm-hmm. And then Spieth having a meltdown final round, you know, he wasn't really in contention, but that definitely cost some people some money.
Oh, yeah, major meltdown. I mean, a quad.
Yeah.
You think about just the quad, so you get those negative points, first of all, and then when you're dropping, like for Tiger, when he had that water ball and ended up with a double, he dropped from, I believe, tied in third, possibly tied in fifth, to T11. And mm-hmm. that is a significant amount of points when you're talking like some of these tournaments where it's first or nothing, like, which was my exact case, but like him, Tiger and Spieth both in the last two holes, even Webb Simpson with that double. I mean, for me, that probably wasn't a huge thing, but when you're dropping down the ranks in terms of getting out of the top 10, that can be pretty significant.
I'm sure there were people that were on the edge of a cut line and you know, that couple of negative points might have put them on the wrong side of it.
Yeah, and then in another aspect of it, I think I read Jordan Spieth lost himself a little over $100,000 with his 18th hole. So I guess you would consider that significant to some people.
Yeah, for some reason, I feel like he's doing just fine.
Yeah, I think you might be right about that. And I think Tiger is too.
Yeah. But yeah, it was an all-over-the-place event. And you know, we're coming into this week. He said it's a lackluster field again. What was the tournament we just had where Charlie Hoffman was like 9K or 10K? What was that? The Valspar?
Yeah, that was with was that with Sergio being pretty much the standalone.
Yep.
Was that right after the Masters was the
RBC,
which I know is pretty much what I had in mind when I was saying the major hangover week where good players seem to do bad and that random stuff happens.
Right. We got to figure out who this week's Paul Casey is from the RBC. Just
Yeah, exactly.
Dominate it and miss the cut.
Yeah, and then like if it was, in fact, Hoffman, I know he had a good master, so he probably would have been high, like priced up there. So I think you really do have to keep your eyes open for stuff like that this week, like recency bias in terms of what happened at the Players and some of these names are just not names you see every week.
Nope, not at all. So go ahead and give us what you have on the course, and I'll chime in there as we go.
All right. So like we said, it's AT&T Byron Nelson. It is taking place at Trinity Forest Golf Club in Dallas, Texas, just outside of Dallas, Texas. It's a little under 7,400 yard par 71. So seeing as it's par 71, you're working with some longer holes. I think people are kind of not really accepting that this is going to be a longer course. It might favor some distance. But as we talk about some conflicting news, some conflicting reports that are going on out there, some people think you're not going to have the distance. Some people think it'll help. Some people think you need to be accurate. Some people don't. Anyway, the course is very new. It opened in 2016. This is its first pro tournament. It is a links style course. If you're looking at a picture, a flyover of this course, you're immediately thinking links course. But we are in Texas, so the Texas side of things come into play. There are no trees on the course. It's called Trinity Forest, but there's no trees on the course. It's actually surrounded by a forest, so it does make some sense. The website describes it as a windswept rolling meadow. So expect the wind, expect, you know, links feel wide open, built on sand. It's built on a landfill. It's going to be sandy. There is long, very long, rough off of, not even quite off of the fairways. It's like a huge fairway. And if you're really wild off the tee, you're going to end up in the very long stuff, where you're going to find yourself in some trouble. You could lose your ball. You could be right in back of a rock or buried. Like, stuff happens when you hit into that stuff. So I think there is some trouble to get into, but it's going to play like a links course. These greens are, for the most part, very big. Most of them have false fronts, false backs, false sides. It's an inverted bowl. So you could, if you're overshooting the green, you're going over and you're going to keep rolling over. If you're short, you're going to run far off the front. It's the links feel. There are some guys out here that we know have had luck at links courses. I kind of took the digging into a links route. That was my strategy coming into this week. But as you know, I think that could be disputed. There are a few things being talked about. It's on the longer side. And in terms of grass, the Zyosia. There you go. You always know how to pronounce grass names. So I let you do that. So pretty much what I've heard. Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking of when I read a description of it. I think pretty much what's being thrown around the industry is that the ball is going to sit up. You're going to hit it high. Mm-hmm. Out of Bermuda, your ball might sit down. If Bermuda is like a couple inches long, your ball is going to get kind of nestled and buried down in there. If anyone's ever played on Bermuda, you know that. I think it was Jordan Spieth that said it, where the ball is going to sit up a bit and you're going to keep hitting the ball high. Yeah. So if you're in the fairway and if you're in the rough before the real long stuff, your ball is still going to get in the air. I think personally, I feel like having played in different types of grass, if you're sitting up in a lie like that, and sometimes even get lies like that in the fairway, my take is that it's going to be tough to really hit down on the ball, pick it cleanly, and it's going to be tough to control the spin on the ball. Chances are you're going to have less spin on the ball, which that's going to make approach shots a little more difficult. You could see people going over the green. And then again, wind, we got to kind of wait to hear on that. This is Texas. Winds can kick up. They can really kick up there. If they do, that kind of brings a whole nother side into this, but what we're seeing right now is it doesn't look like it's going to be crazy or anything like that. If you have anything to add.
Yeah. So backstory on the course, it's a former landfill. Basically people are, for years were just dumping stuff here, you know, debris, trash, all kinds of stuff like that. So it was remediated by the state. And eventually, you know, the developers of this course purchased it. The tricky thing was they weren't allowed to dig into the ground because it's contaminated. So they spread topsoil over the entire golf course and shaped it. And so if you're looking at like a flyover or a picture of the hole from a pulled back view, you see all the little, you know, undulations, little bubbles sticking up, mounds here and there. Like it looks like somebody just dumped a pile of rocks in the middle of the fairway and covered it with grass. Like that's actually what happened. it's kind of crazy. So not like any other golf course in America, and kind of even the world, really unique place.
I say we do this more often, cover up the dirty side of the world with golf courses. And I think we're all going to live in a better world.
Yeah. It's actually that is a little bit of a movement to do that. And this is the most high profile one. So they're hoping to nail it. If people come in with an open mind, they're going to have a good week. You know, the one thing I didn't like that I was hearing on that front was that, you know, the PGA might want the course to be watered a little heavier, slow things down a little bit so that they don't, you know, get people complaining. You know, I'm like, I don't give a shit. If they can't play on a fast course, what the hell are they doing on the PGA tour? You know,
Amen.
That's the kind of course you're playing this week. You chose to play in the Byron Nelson, you know, suck it up, play the course. It's the same for everyone. You know, don't cry.
Exactly. It's the same for everyone other than spectators, and spectators want to see pros struggle.
Yep.
That's why it's fun to watch the Masters. That's why it's fun to watch the Open. That's why it's fun to watch the PGA, even when everyone's complaining about the greens. Like, make it difficult. Like, leave the rocks in the fairway for all I care.
Right.
I think it would be fun to watch.
So yeah, and then, you know, through my research the last couple of days, I've just come across all these narratives. So because there's no tournament history, people are searching for something to hang their hat on to say, who am I going to play this week? So let me just run through them, and then I'll give the counterpoint that I've also come across, because nothing's really pinned down. So the first thing is the yardage is a longer yardage. It's just par 71 and about 7,400 yards. So, you know, your first thought there might be that a player that has some distance could play well, but that's not the case for two reasons. One, not necessarily anywhere in the fairway is a good spot. You need to be coming in at the right angle, depending on the way the green is shaped and where the runoffs of the green are. So accuracy is still going to be at a premium despite wide open fairways. And then also because it is going to be drier, you're going to get extra run, and that kind of negates some of the big hitters. But then is it going to be firm? Like I said, the PGA might be requesting the course to be watered a little heavier, slow things down a bit more like these guys are used to. So what's going to happen there? It's definitely a links style course. Is it an actual Lynx course, though? You know, the quote from Jordan Spieth is that it doesn't play like a Lynx course. You actually need to drop your shots in. You don't play a lot of bump and run. So, you know, there's some thinking that maybe it's you know, the Lynx link is not the spot to focus the heaviest on. You know, it's not an American Lynx course. Like we talked about pre-show, Chambers Bay and Erin Hills are two of the more popular ones, but it doesn't really resemble those two courses, especially the greens.
Yeah, and another point there is that those are both played in large Shermans or majors, where they're going to be trying to make the course pretty much as hard as possible, and it sounds like, to your point, they might not be doing that this week.
Right. The wind you mentioned, it's the forecast doesn't have really strong winds, but this is a giant square with zero trees, literally zero trees, like you said. So, you know, if there's 10 to 15 mile an hour gusts in the Dallas area, that could mean 20 to 25 miles an hour on this course. The Texas connection, it's like no course in Texas. So, you know, people are looking at players that do well in Texas. That might not matter because this is not a Texas style course. There's a couple people who are members and local Dallas players. Spieth is the most notable, and Bo Hostler is also a member here. I'm not sure that matters either, because how often are these guys playing this course? You know, they're out on tour. They're not home every weekend playing this course on Saturday morning. You know, they get a chance here and there to play it. So they may have some experience, but also the course is going to be styled a little differently for this tournament. Like they're making, you know, one of the par fives, a long par four. Speeds are going to change, like we said. They may firm the greens up, that kind of thing, slow the rest of the course down, who knows. So that kind of gets negated. The only one I'm really thinking is consistent is the heat. It's going to be hot. It's going to be, you know, low to mid 90s going throughout the day. There's zero shade on this course. There's no trees, like you said. It's going to be a pressure cooker out there. Guys are going to need to be in shape. They're going to go through a ton of water. It's going to be exhausting. So that's one factor I've kind of been focusing the most on, which is kind of hard to actually get data on, because, you know, Future of Fantasy has a list that I looked at, but they use 86 and above, which is a good starting point. But, you know, 95, if you're teeing off Friday afternoon and it's 95, it's your tee time. Like, that's way different than 86 on the coast of South Carolina.
Yeah. Another thing I was thinking about with that is, like, heat is going to do, like, the main effect it's going to have on you is it's going to be super draining.
Yeah.
Like, you're going to need to try to keep your energy levels up. And for anyone who got a chance to watch the Players last week and saw Jordan Spieth fall apart on the 18th hole, it looked like he was about to fall over. Like, he was just like, screw this. Like,
yep.
You get that tired, flimsy feeling, yep, and you're going to start missing putts. You're going to not care about your So coming off of a very strenuous four rounds at the Players where you're pretty much given everything you've got, plus, like, Jordan Spieth, people like Jordan Spieth were making a run at it, mm-hmm, playing with Tiger on the fourth day, which I guess we can talk about when we talk about the top of this field. But I think that can have an effect on pretty much just about anyone who played 4 days last week and was anywhere close to being in the mix.
Yep. Yeah. So that's obviously a big factor. The connections people are drawing for that I've seen, Aussies, they typically play well in Texas. You know, people from Australia, your Leishmans, Adam Scott, guys like that. Some South Africans, they've got decent numbers in the heat. Obviously, Texas natives tend to play better in this kind of heat. So we'll hit some of those as we go through. But that's just the entire street of narratives that are going on that I've seen this week. Like I said, you know, you might want to pick just one of them and kind of focus on that. Like you mentioned links. I think that's a good spot because those skills should transition well, even if this doesn't play exactly like a true links course. And then wind and heat are the other two I'm most interested in, probably.
Yeah, I think you could probably go back and forth on the whole member played this course before, blah, 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 for an hour if we wanted to. Like, I've thought about that a lot. I just had a conversation with someone about that. And I mean, it's really interesting because someone like Jordan Spieth, who has played it, even if he's played it five times, which we know he's probably played it more than five times since 2016, mm-hmm, if he's like the off season, the winter, he lives in Texas. So this is like actually his, he's a honorary member or whatever, but he's probably there a lot. I think I heard his swing coach, it's either him or Hostler. Someone's swing coach is based there. Okay. Yeah. So it's Spieth. So he's probably spending quite a bit of time there, and you got to compare that. So it's like, if you're taking Webb Simpson when he missed the cut at Quail Hollow, like, so even if he was in the same position where his coach was there, he played it all the time. So has everyone else on the tour. It's Quail Hollow. Right. People know it. Whereas this, people might be playing it for their, literally their first time today. So,
yeah, I mean, the only thing that I think about with that is I don't know how. I mean, obviously it's a cerebral course, but I don't know how complicated it is. Like, I think it seems to me a lot of the holes are fairly straightforward. If you've gathered a little bit of local intel, which, you know, any tour caddy is going to have gotten, you know, the 411 on how to play it. You're going to know how to play it. It's just a matter of execution and risk management. You know, do you want to, you know, the best example of that is the short par four, number five. It's a drivable green, but it's a small upside down cereal bowl. You know, like you mentioned earlier about the inverted bowl. If you don't hit a perfect drive, you're going off the back and you might end up bogeying the hole that you thought you were going to have an eagle opportunity on.
Yep. Yeah, it is definitely. And the only other thing I'll add to that is that I think Jordan Spieth also talked about approaches to quadrants of the green, which I know we talk about quite a bit, but that just happens to be the case with a lot of these bigger greens, is you need to know you're not necessarily just going for the pin. Again, if you watched the Players last week, it was like on the 17th hole on Sunday, everyone knew you land that 10 feet to the left of the pin, you're going to have a chance of it rolling down for a hole in one. Like, you need to know exactly where to, I don't say you need to know, but I think it will be very helpful to know where you need to land your shots on your approaches. And that's going to give someone like Jordan Spieth or Bo Hostler, or I believe Hunter Mahan is also a member out there, someone like that, someone who knows this course and has played it or has caddies that can tell them these things, maybe a leg up. So again, it can really go either way. Like you said, I agree. Choose your narrative, stick to it, believe what you want to believe. We're all going to learn something this week.
Right. Yeah. Just on a quick note on those greens, it's they're really the link style, right? Like, there's just all of a sudden like a 1 foot mound in the middle of the green. Like, you might have to putt over that. Like, that's not a gimme 2 putt. You might be 3 putting.
It's going to turn into mini golf. It's going to be putt putt.
I wonder if anybody actually has done that this week. Like, let me just, you know, go to a local putt putt course and get in the right mind frame.
Yeah, I mean, if they're trying to make the course tough, put a hole right next to a 1 foot mound and then bam.
Get the windmill out there. Let's see some timing.
Oh, that'll be fun.
But all right, let's jump in at the top here. We only got 3 guys over 10K. All of them profile really well for the course. Let's start with Spieth. You know, he's obviously Dallas native. His home's here. He's Mr. Texas. Every single metric I've looked at points to him being the winner of this course. He's a good links player. He's good in the heat. He's good in the wind. He's got good strokes gained in Texas, even though it seems like he's disappointed a lot of people when he's had to play on his home turf. Do you agree with that?
I do agree with that. Yes. He's really like, it's becoming really hard for me to make a decision on the Jordan Spieth. And normally when I can't make a decision on someone like that, if I am projecting his ownership to be 20%, I'll try to put him in 20% of my lineups. Like, honestly, like, he's Jordan Spieth and he does great on links courses.
Yeah.
with all these questions we've asked ourselves about the course, plus the Jordan Spieth question mark of he looked like he was going to collapse on the 18th green last week, plus he's the AT&T sponsored guy, home guy. We've talked about that narrative a million times too, which normally means they're not going to do well.
Right. Like,
it's almost like I need to make like a, what are those things called? The overlapping circles.
Venn diagram.
A Venn diagram of, or a pros and cons list, whatever you want, right, of Jordan Spieth, and see which side you come out on it. Like, yeah, he's the most expensive guy too. So
like, from a sports world perspective, like home cooking is usually when things are good. You know, you're home in the baseball world, the football world, the basketball world, like that's always home court advantage. In golf, it's actually, it could be a little bit the opposite. You know, you're not as focused because you've got your home life going on. You know, so Spieth being a Dallas native, he's got all kinds of, you know, appearances to make. He's got family. He's got to get tickets for people. He's got people blowing his cell phone up all week. You know, all of his sponsorship duties, like that wears on you. That takes away from your focus on the course. So that's maybe one reason he hasn't done as well at this particular event, and just Texas in general.
I agree. It's like, I wonder where he's sleeping. Cause I can tell you, if I'm sleeping at my parents' house and playing in a golf tournament,
right,
I don't think I would, it really is like personally playing golf in any competitive manner, I don't want to have any of my friends around me. I don't want to have any of my family around me. And that is on so much of a lesser level. It's unbelievable. But I think we've seen it before. Like we saw it, even just the sponsorship thing. I remember Ricky Fowler earlier this year. I can't remember the tournament. Who is it that he's sponsored by that holds a tournament? It doesn't even matter, but I remember he's missed the cut like 3 years in a
row.
State
Farm? Is it the State Farm?
Yeah. It's, or the Farmers Insurance Open. Yeah. So you got to take all those things into consideration, and then you got to think about his ownership. That's really what it boils down to. And if people are really, you know, honestly, he's the most expensive person. And like, I think a safe place to put him is around 20% owned. Hopefully not more than that, but if it's going over that, I'm comfortable with fading him.
I mean, I think that's about right. His ownership, despite him being that pricey, I can't see him being anywhere below the high 20s, maybe even 30. It's just, there's just so many arrows pointing to his name and such a wasteland below him. You just, like, the safety of Jordan Spieth is going to feel comfortable. So I think he's going to be one of the chalkiest plays we've seen all season.
That's very true. Very true. The field is just horrendous, and then you have Jordan Spieth.
Yeah, I think your 20% isn't a bad number. You know, if you're going to build 10 lineups, have him in two. You know, that's not bad. If he crash and burns, or you know, ties for 30th because he just had a so-so kind of tournament, you're fine. If he wins the whole thing, then hopefully you've got one of those two carrying you.
Yeah, hopefully you have five people who made the cut, and then bam, you're good.
And while we're on the home cooking kind of subject, Sergio Garcia, who's in this tier, he lives in Texas as well. He's got a young baby at home. And take it from a guy who's got a one-year-old at home right now, man. I could not play a golf tournament in 2 days. We've been having some teething this week, so it's been a little bit of a crankiness and up at night. And that's what I'm saying. Like if you're in Florida in a hotel, you're not worried about that. You're not being woken up in the middle of the night with home life or any of that craziness. So,
that's a really good point. I think that's a really good point. Like Sergio hasn't been himself lately at all in terms of performing on the golf course. And we've seen that through his recent finishes of 70th at the Players, and then his two starts before that, he got cut from the Texas Open in Texas, and he got cut from the Masters with a 13 or whatever it was. So
Yeah,
he
came out on fire at the players, and then the weekend just was not kind to him. I'm a little bit interested in Sergio because I feel like most people are either going Spieth or Kuchar, or they're going to go down into the nines somewhere. So this is kind of the same mindset as the players last week. I'm just going to avoid chalk wherever possible and hope that game theory carries me to a win.
Yeah. What you just said is, I think that can definitely be true. If you're going to pay up for somebody, it's going to be Spieth or Kuchar. Kuchar is just consistent yet again, which I love, because he was like Webb Simpson, Matt Kuchar, maybe throwing a little Zach Johnson, and those are my guys for consistency, and I love it, and everyone knows I love it. So Matt Kuchar definitely on my radar this week. And
so let me give you I threw together some top 25 lists of just some of those things we talked about. Hot Texas courses, American style links, Future of Fantasy's links list, Future Fantasy's Heat, Future Fantasy Win, Future Fantasy Texas. They do top 25s, strokes gained. So let me give you Kuchar in all of these. Hot Texas courses, second in strokes gained. American links, third in strokes gained. Just links in general, 11th in strokes gained. Win, 13th in strokes gained. Texas, 9th strokes gained. And Heat, 11th strokes gained. He checks every box that I wanted to see this week. He's one of the few guys besides Spieth and Sergio that does that.
And I love that. I really do. And like there are some stats that comparing finishes in the players to finishes in this tournament. And pretty much if you did really well in the players, you don't, at least you're not going to win this week. But you know, with T17, he was right in there. He kind of did like the average Kuchar, and he was just playing his way along last week and ended up like right up there with a – I mean, nobody really had a shot other than Webb Simpson. So a T17 and it's not far away from the field, and I love those stats. Those are great to hear.
Yeah. And with Kuch, we talked about it at the players. It's a course designed to frustrate you. But he's just like this big, happy, dumb guy that's just going to grin and play golf, and you're not going to get him down with a tough course design.
Oh, yeah. He's going to walk around smiling with his rosy red cheeks, and he's going to leave, and no matter what happens, he's going to still be smiling and happy.
So, you know, on a course that could discourage people, through four rounds, like, he's a guy I don't worry about with that.
Yep. I literally saw him at the players miss. It was like, had to be miss like a 6-footer. And then he just smiled and tapped it in. I was just like, how many guys on tour do you see doing that? Especially when they're in the mix like that.
Yeah. All right. So let's crunch the nines here. Matsuyama at the top. Like you said, he's kind of been garbage this year. Maybe it's the injury he had earlier. He's always kind of done that. Even when he's been good, it's never been dominating. He actually, on my list, profiles pretty well in a lot of these things.
I think
the link style he's very good at. He plays well in the wind.
I think he always profiles well.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. And so it's almost like you have to look at Hideki and go off recent form, whether it's an injury, whether it's – I think he gets hot and cold, and that's really what it comes down to. Like last year he had like such a hot streak, and it was crazy. And I guess if you were ahead of that, you were going to be making money. But right now he's not playing well.
Yeah. I mean basically his last two events, cut and 76 – which is effectively cut. But he did shoot a 69 in his second round at the players.
He did. He did. And that is actually intriguing. Like if, sorry for cutting you off, but if you have a bunch of stats kind of against the fact that he's playing terribly and he he did have a very good second round. It was just one round, kind of like Phil in a way. I mean,
yeah. I mean, I think there's win value there with him. It's he's a risk, obviously, but he's going to be underowned for what his win probability is. So that makes him a good GPP play for me, but he could also get cut in a weak field.
Yeah, you know, I totally agree. Like, again, going back to this field, like, you cannot count Jordan Spieth, Matt Kuchar, Sergio Garcia, or Hideki Matsuyama out of it. Those are clear-cut, the four names in this field. You can almost take Matt Kuchar out of that and just say Spieth, Garcia, Matsuyama, and, like, those are always, they're just up there. They are the pros of the pros. And no matter how bad he has been playing, he is Hideki Matsuyama. He's got some good stats on links courses. He has some other stats to support that. Just for me, it's a recent play type of thing for him individually, mm-hmm. which leads me to, I'm probably going to be full fade on him, but 9,900, guaranteed low owned, because people are either going up and down, yeah. up or down from him.
Yep. And at the bottom of this tier, you got a couple Aussies, Adam Scott, Mark Leishman. Chalky Adam Scott, yeah, I'll pass. He actually had a pretty good players, finally hit some putts. He's a good links golfer, actually. And does well in the heat. So if he weren't chalky, I'd be a little bit interested. But at that price, if I can knock a leg out from a lot of the field, I'm going full fade on Adam Scott.
Yeah, if people are, like, following Adam Scott because he finally made some putts last week, I've been full fade on Adam Scott since I can remember, and I will continue to be.
You'll come out ahead that way.
And I hope so. Yeah, I really hope so. But for me, Adam Scott strikes me as someone who's going to get another win in his career. And it's probably going to be at a bigger tournament than this. How big?
Right.
I couldn't tell you, but I could just see it being a little more of like a Players Championship or something like that, which he played very well, and he finished T11, as we all know. That was quite a few strokes out of the lead, Webb Simpson, but he did what people have not really done before. In this price range, I think my two favorites right now are actually Brendan Grace and Jimmy Walker. Mark Leishman, for me, I think a lot of people are on Mark Leishman this week.
Yep.
And I think I'm going to continue to not be all that interested in Mark Leishman. His links play, you know, what I pulled in terms of links play, I don't know if it's agreeing with everyone else's links play stats, but he's not statting out all that impressively for me. And Jimmy Walker's coming back into form. Brendan Grace, we know, can play on mm-hmm. the links course. He can play in the wind. Both of them have been playing well. Mark Leishman has been so-so, back and forth, and kind of leaning towards not good. So that's me, Walker and Grace.
He flashed there right around the Masters and the Arnold Palmer, but since then has not been very good. He does tend to play better with bigger spotlight. So he's another guy that I feel like is going to just kind of gather up some ownership and, hopefully –
yeah,
not end up winning it.
Yeah, I mean, he's capable of a lot. He's made 11 cuts and 13 starts with 6 top 10s. So if he's playing pretty much.
Jimmy Walker is the one guy you mentioned who's chalky that I don't think you can afford to fade. He's a good Texas golfer. And he's obviously had a good week last week, good week the week before. Seems like he's got the Lyme's disease figured out. I do worry a little bit with that, with how draining this event is going to be with the heat. But he's the one chalky guy in this range I'm comfortable with.
Yeah, that's another good point that if he's going to be worn out anywhere, and I know what Lyme disease does to you, and I know that everyone is just immediately thinking Lyme disease when, like, how the hell could you take in Lyme disease into consideration after 20th at the Masters, 4th at the Valero, 2nd at the Players? I mean, he's been playing well, but it is very true. It's going to be hot. It's going to be draining, and he's coming off 4 rounds at the Players. But with that said, the Players, I think, was draining itself, and he shot a 67 in his final round. So I think he's back into it. I think he's feeling it, and I'm definitely a fan this week.
All right, so then top of the eights, I need your take. Brent Snedeker, he's showing up everywhere I'm looking. All these metrics I'm mentioning, he's popping. Hasn't had the best season, but, you know, it's a weak field. Can Sneds do something here?
I without a doubt, he was one of the guys I had right in front of me. I love Brent Snedeker this week. Like, I really do. And the first thing that I noticed when I pulled all of these link stats were it's Jordan Spieth followed by Brent Snedeker. And it's like across the board, really, like the only thing that he kind of lacks in is strokes gained off the tee, which is kind of what we're going back and forth on. Like, do you need to hit it that far or do you not need to hit it that far? And I don't think you need to. I think it'll help, but I don't think it's going to be totally necessary. I think sometimes playing it safe on that drivable par 4 or the par 5 that you could hit in 2, like go get your average driver wedge putt birdies out there. Yeah. And he missed the cut.
The quote I'm seeing thrown around this week from Bill Kaur, one of the course designers, is that what they had in mind with this course was one that could be played by, you know, long hitters and short hitters. Mm-hmm. And you just have to decide with your angle of attack. So I think for Sneds, like that's he'll be fine.
Yeah, I would like to go back and see like 3 names last week: Brent Snedeker, Phil Mickelson, Hideki Matsuyama. All missed the cut. All had horrendous first rounds at the Players. Some of them more so than others, but Brent Snedeker shot an 82 and my God, that is not good.
No.
But he came back and he shot a 72 in the second round. Like we said, Hideki kind of did the same thing, but much better in the second round, a little better in the second round. So he shot a 72 after the second day.
That just happens. I mean, if you go back and look at his logs, like you're going to see high 70s, mid 70s, the occasional 80. He just has a bad round here and there, but if he puts 4 together without it, mm-hmm. It's going to be a good week.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Even if like the Valspar, he went 70, 68, 67, 78 and finished 31st. I'm sure he was in the top 10 going into Sunday. So, yeah. Hey, GPP play. I'm not going to tell you to play Brent Snedeker in cash, but then again, this week, nobody knows anything. So who knows?
Yeah. There's not a lot of other names I like in the eights here. Anybody that does it for you?
I think I just have to mention Bo Hostler. Do you think he's going to be chalky because of everything I've read, everything I've listened to? Everybody likes
local guy. And I actually don't like his game for this course. I think he's a bit of fool's gold this week.
I completely agree. Like, he's been doing real well, and I think it's hard to ignore someone from Texas who has been playing as well as he has. But I think it's one of those names that people in this whole industry who really like try to find the guy who's going to be the next thing and be early on it. I think people are just focusing on him way too much. I think he's overpriced at 9,000 and I mean, yeah, no, thank you. Like, yes, someone who a name like this, we could see winning this tournament this week. He's gained strokes over his last 5 tournaments, but 46th, 34th, 51st, 16th, second at the Shell Houston Open in Texas, 51st at the Texas Open. Like, there are definitely positive sides to him, and there are negative sides to it. And I think one of the biggest negatives is that everyone and their mother is talking about them. And another negative for me is that he's coming in nowhere worth noting on any type of links statistic.
Yep. Yeah, I like him a lot better at a course that his distance can play up. Any love for Rory Sabatini?
No. I think that's another kind that people might like, but 8,600 for Rory Sabatini. Sabatini is
you've been seeing him on leaderboards lately, so I think that's going to stick in people's minds.
I hope it does, because he's not going to finish better than 30th. I don't think it. Like I said, it's a tournament that a lot of things could happen, but he's not on my radar.
All right, last guy I'm interested in the eights, JB Holmes. Are we back on Holmes? Yeah,
JB Holmes is someone who is actually interesting to me here. His stats across the board are surprisingly well for his recent finishes lately. I have him, let me see if I can get some specifics here. It's strokes gained tee to green over his last 24 rounds, 7th in the field. He's top 20 in strokes gained off the tee, strokes gained ball striking, strokes gained par 4. And I think in this field, like, that's already saying quite a bit for some of the names that are around him. And he's priced at 8,300 with Scott Piercy, Peter Uihlein, Rory Sabatini, Charles Howell, Aaron Wise at 8,800. Like, I don't know what that's about. I think JB Holmes is actually very interesting.
Yeah. And he shows up on my hot Texas course build, as well as the American links and just links in general.
Yep, I was going to say links, my little links Texas fusion here. He is top 11 in both short term and long term. So I like him.
All right, can we move to the sevens, or is there anybody else?
Grayson Murray is interesting to me at 8,200. I rarely play Grayson Murray because he's capable of so much bad that it scares me. Mm-hmm. But in a field like this, he turns your head a little bit.
Pretty big price jump for him.
Big time, yeah. I mean, but I think we're going to see price jumps for a lot of people, which is why someone like Brant Snedeker, 8,900, it seems like a more reasonable price jump to me. Or like Mark Leishman at 9,100, going backward on Mark Leishman, like 9,100 mm-hmm. is in this field a great price for him. So,
yeah. Yeah, I'm much more comfortable with a guy taking, you know, $1,000 jump from 8 to 9. Than a guy going 6,900 to 7,900.
Yeah. Yeah. So Grayson Murray, he's on my radar, but I'm not going to, you know.
All right. Give me a couple names out of the sevens, because there's a lot of guys in the sevens. Some that we're used to not seeing. They used to be in the sixes.
Yeah.
Small field.
I think a couple of my – I'll start with the upper sevens, and surprisingly enough, Graham McDowell at 7,900 is actually pretty interesting here. He's had some decent finishes in his recent past. I think he's done that very quietly. Looking at where he finishes, where he stats out in terms of this type, do you have any of your stats on
him? From Northern Ireland as well, so you know, he's not a stranger to this style of golf course at all.
Yep. Yeah. So, the long term in the, this model I have in front of me, he's far above average for the links style, the American links style, and seeing how the course plays, like he's gained some of the most DraftKings points and total strokes gained, really, in comparison to this field. And you look at what he's done recently, like a T27 at the Wells Fargo. He made the cut, didn't have too impressive of a finish at the Texas Open. But I think both of those things are to be noted at 7,900, especially with the guys, once again, who are around him. Like, you have Mark Leishman and Grayson Murray, who both missed the cut at, actually, that was the RBC, sorry. Yeah, in the RBC, and he did not miss the cut there. But I think he is popping a bit for me. So there are a few more names here. It gets very interesting at this point because, man, we're trying to do a deep dive into some guys that a lot of people just aren't that familiar with, really thinking about as much as you probably need to think about some of these guys this week. Anyone for you that stands out?
So you got a couple Aussies, Matt Jones and Aaron Baddeley.
Matt Jones.
So you got that connection. They've got a couple other metrics that they might pop on a little bit. You know, they're both risks, but if you're taking that Aussie angle and the heat angle, a guy I really want to play is Bill Haas at 7,500. He just has not been all that good this year. You know, earlier in the year, he was in that car accident where his friend died. I don't know if that's still affecting him. But a lot of missed cuts, a lot of 70s, you know, the RBC is the one place he played well, tied for seventh. But he's a guy that showed well on my list of different boxes with the American links, wind, hot Texas courses. So
yeah, Matt Jones is once again far above average. I would consider him very good in terms of the American links / Texas list I have in front of me. In 7,600, as weird as it is to see Matt Jones at 7,600, especially considering some of what he's done lately, which is a whole bunch of nothing. We have seen him do well in the past. I have definitely taken him into consideration before. So I actually like him as like I would imagine none of these people are going to be that high on, because it's such a toss up between a lot of guys down here. And then
you want to know the guy who's going to be high owned?
Joaquin Neiman?
Joaquin. He's going to have some ownership, but not quite as high as 7,200 Kevin Na.
Okay. Yeah. I could have guessed that. Yep.
Na's going to be crazy owned. He's such a low price. He profiles really, really well. If he weren't chalky, he'd actually be a good play. He's got 55-1 win odds, which like everybody else in this range is between like 150 and 200. So he really sticks out like a sore thumb if you look for that kind of value. So you know, the grinder kind of players that just look at that and stick him in are going to be on him. People recognize his name, but Chalk Kevin Na is just such a poison pill. I would not do it.
Yeah. I think two things I'll say for Kevin Na is, number one, whenever I decide to play Kevin Na, it is the worst week ever to play Kevin Na, and like he's going to withdraw or something. I don't trust the guy, and you tell me he's got ownership on him and he's severely underpriced, and I guess I really just trust him less. Like, I don't trust him at a course like this. I don't trust him in general.
Yeah.
And number two, a little bit of contrast to that is he's 9,000 on FanDuel and he's 7,200 on DraftKings. Pretty huge difference, actually. He's the 22 top guy on FanDuel, 55th on DraftKings. So I think where he's going to be chalk is definitely DraftKings. So I mean, FanDuel, you're paying up for someone who I don't like. DraftKings, you're paying down for someone who I don't like. So
the other guy that's going to be a little chalky that I would stay away from in this range is Keith Mitchell.
Mm-hmm.
He's flashed here and there, had a good round, but isn't putting it together. And you know, when there's a guy in this range that's chalk, unless it's like We talked about that situation earlier in the year with Cabrera Bello, where he was so low coming over from the Euro Tour. Like, that was just found value. These guys aren't found value. They're risk plays with ownership associated. And
yeah,
that's a great spot to fade.
Yeah, like Rafa is someone who you can be so sure is going to at least make a cut for you. Kevin Na, who knows? Keith Mitchell, who knows? Keith Mitchell, I put in the same bucket as Bo Hostler, as people the DFS community just loves for some reason.
Yeah, and it's like,
yeah, if you have that the secondary PGA Tour event that you can somehow place bets on, like Keith Mitchell, hell yeah. There are names in this field, names that pretty much say don't pay $7,800 for Keith Mitchell. Again, my disclaimer of the week is anyone can win this, and he's probably going to get a win eventually. I don't see it with this one. Kevin, no. Another guy, Joaquin Niemann, interesting play. I think he's also someone who could probably be filed in that same area with Hostler and Mitchell, as people are really coming around to him and like him and know he's capable of good finishes. And yeah, I agree with that. It's interesting. I would much rather shift over to Harris English, who has some serious experience and can hit the ball a mile and could, I mean, I guess I'll say, like, he can be a bust, but anyone down here can be a bust. But he on multiple levels, I'm kind of liking Harris English.
Yeah, you know, he's not been as bad this year, especially earlier on. So, he crossed my mind for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I guess 7,800 is in. Normally, you wouldn't want to pay 7,800 for Harris English, but
right
in this field,
unless you're taking, you know, two of the top 5 or 10 guys, like, you're gonna have salary.
Yeah, he's highly hit or miss. Like, the amount of missed cuts is actually kind of absurd. But hey, look at the field we're working with. I gotta name someone here, right?
Yep.
All right. Another guy, 7,500, real quick. Johnson Wagner. I mentioned him a couple weeks ago, and it was almost like I was holding back because I was like, why the hell am I saying Johnson Wagner right now? Why am I telling people to play Johnson Wagner? And then he at least had a couple good rounds. Yeah, he finished 13th at the Wells Fargo, 20th at the Valero in Texas, 52nd. He made the cut and then shot 71, 72, which is quite fine, at the Houston Open in Texas. Johnson Wagner, I say, hell yeah.
Yeah, the one name that has got me a little bit interested is Anirban Lahiri. I always see him on draft.com with a good projection, and I'm like, why do they project this guy? And I think he's got that, you know, he's got a good short game. He's from India. So if we're playing that that heat kind of narrative, that's a guy that's definitely come up playing some hot golf.
It's definitely hot in India. I agree with that. And Links/Texas, he's got some notables in there. He's not below average in this field, and he is priced below average in this field. So I think there's an argument to be made there.
All right, so that's basically it. Anybody, any last guys to mention from the sixes for you?
I actually have this a little bit of a list of my value possibilities, who admittedly I don't have all that much to back these guys up, other than a little bit of what I pulled on Links/Texas Golf, and then a little bit of recent play mixed in there. I think someone I want to mention is Kevin Tway. He's also at 7,200 alongside the other Kevin of Kevin Na. I would much rather play Kevin Tway here. I just think he can succeed You know what? They both have upside. I think probably Kevin Na has more upside, a higher percentage of hitting that upside, at least. Kevin Tue, however, is going to be the lower owned of the two, and I think he's definitely got some potential there. Corey Connors is a guy who I like to shout out in these smaller events. He went through a real hot period. He seems to be coming back a little bit. I like that. Richie Werenski at 7,100 has been playing well, and that's about all I can say for him. And three real bargain guys that I have my eye on: Michael Thompson, Andrew Putnam, Brian Gay. None of them are playing extremely well. Brian Gay, I think, is always in it in an event like this. I've definitely put him in a DraftKings lineup or two recently. Michael Thompson, I would say the same thing. And then Andrew Putnam has been doing some decent things lately. I think at 6,900, if they make the cut, you're happy. They're going to allow you to get like a Jordan Spieth and maybe an Adam Scott or a Brendan Grace or a Jimmy. You probably fit Jordan Spieth, Jimmy Walker, Brant Snedeker, and then you choose a few of these guys I just mentioned, and you have yourself a pretty interesting studs and duds line up there.
So there's two old guys I want to mention real quick down here. Ernie Els and Ken Duke. Like, kings of accuracy on a link-style course that should negate distance, a wide-open kind of field. Crazier things have happened.
I was hoping you would say Ernie Els because I didn't want to say it. But when I was looking at the chart I've been throwing out across the board, like, I mean, he's probably just got experience everywhere because he's old. Mm-hmm. But hey.
And Ken Duke is the king of accuracy. Like, if it's gonna be a fast course, Ken Duke could actually do a little something.
He's another guy you never know, and that's 6,600. Whew, that's cheap.
Yeah. All right, so talk a real quick bit of ownership here. We kind of did it going through. Obviously, Spieth, super chalky over on Fanshare. He's got by far the most tags. Number two is Bo Hossler. So at 9K, he's going to be real chalky. He's a fade for me. I think you as well. Mm-hmm. Mark Leishman has moved into third. Adam Scott in fifth. Yeah, those guys are just too risky with that much chalk on them. Keith Mitchell right after them. Don't play guys at 7,800 chalk. Jimmy Walker's up there. You know, just despite myself liking him, you might want to keep that ownership in check on Jimmy Walker. JB Holmes, Peter Uihlein. I wouldn't go anywhere near Uihlein this week. He had a good week last week, but
not with any mention of ownership am I interested in him.
Yeah. And then Sergio and Kuchar pretty low on the tags. Matsuyama really low. So, you know, we talked about their ownerships are probably gonna be in good spots. I'm definitely gonna maybe start a couple lineups with one of those guys each.
Yeah, you'll get some serious leverage with Matsuyama. I gotta say that, despite all the negativity I had earlier.
Martin Laird, he's got some tags. That's an interesting name we didn't mention that kind of fits this course style. That's about it. So let's wrap up by picking a couple one and duns. Let's go three one and duns, one from each kind of pricing tier. Say 9,500 and above, 8 to 9,500, and then below 8. I can't go with Matsuyama as much as I want to. give me Sergio for the above 9,500.
Above 9,500. Oh man. Like, if I had to choose someone that I think is going to win, I'd almost have to go to Jordan Spieth, but you're going to want in an actual one and done format, you're going to want to save him right this year for sure. Like, I would not be, You know, there's an argument to be made, though, because this is such a weak field that it's like, why would you not take Jordan Spieth if you're getting the same amount of points?
Yeah. If you didn't use him at the Masters, this could be the week.
Yeah, if you didn't use him, and if this is comparable points to other larger tournaments that are to come. But, I mean, if it's not Spieth for me, it's Kuchar above 9,500, 100%.
Mm-hmm. All right, then in the next tier, I'd be going with Snedeker. There's not a lot of spots you're going to want to use him in a one and done. This is a weak field. His game really fits it well.
Yeah, I agree with you, but for the sake of not agreeing with you, I will say Brendan Grace.
That's a good one too. Yeah.
I like him. I like him this week.
And then sub eight. Kind of torn between some of those Aussies we mentioned. You know, there's not a lot of spots you're gonna want to play them. I'd probably go Aaron Baddeley if I had to pick between the two.
It really is a tough one. Choosing someone to take it home below 8K. I guess I'd just have to go with, oh man, I'm really, someone we didn't even mention I do like here, but I'll say Graham McDowell.
That's a good one. Who was the one we didn't mention?
Someone we didn't mention was Ryan Palmer, who's been super on and off, but I think he is actually statting out kind of well here. And I guess my lesser name pick here would have been Joaquin Niemann, who I'm still scared to even play, but I could see this dude win it. I really could.
Yeah, I mean, he showed a little something at the Masters.
Yeah, I mean, what did he do before that? Where it was in Texas, right?
I don't even know if he had played.
Oh, we're talking Palmer.
After the Masters at the Valero, he was sixth.
Yeah. So the Valero, that's in Texas too. So, I mean,
that was the one. It was a similar field where it was, Charlie Hoffman was in the tens.
Yeah, exactly. And hey, it's kind of what we're cooking with this week back in Texas coming off of the major. So, something to think about. I mean, as can be said, as can be seen here, I think I'm going to do a little bit of digging into the eight and below range here, but I think we give a pretty good picture of what I'm thinking so far.
Yep. All right, that's the time we got tonight, guys. Make sure you stay with us through the week in the Slack chat. If you're not a Lineup Logic subscriber, get over to patreon.com/lineuplogic. Get in there. Get the cheat sheet. Get Alex's model. I promise you, our work is not done. We're grinding it right up till tournament lock. Any bit of information we can glean is going to come your way in Slack. Just make sure you add us with questions. I'm pretty much worthless in Slack if you don't at me. So
yeah. If you say golf or PGA or my name, I'm 100% responding within 30 seconds. If you at me, I will again 100% be there. And I will say quickly that I was very disappointed at the amount of talk during the Players because it was little to none and I was just too tilting to start any conversation. So let's turn that around as we get into the thick of the golf season. You know, this might seem like an ugly week, but I sometimes, like I said, you can make money on these weeks and you can make a lot of money on these weeks.
Yeah, we've had some of our best results in weeks like this. So, you know, if you're coming out of NBA, MLB's maybe wearing you down a little bit. Give golf a chance, man. So, all right, guys, good luck and stay cashing.